Pranams at Bhagwan's lotus feet. Dear fellow Sai devotees and brothers and sisters, it's very, very, very inspiring, very ennobling, very beautiful time to be here. Thanks a lot to all of you for having me here. As Dr. Gosselin spoke, I was completely transported. He took us to such endearing moments, though past, you know, but recreated for us. It created all those images that, you know, we as students never had a chance to see, actually. You know, the books, like the books written by Dinah Baskins and a lot of what Dr. Phil spoke, such an endearing moments with one who was so great, so unapproachable as God, but came down to become so approachable, so accessible that Dr. Phil could even speak about him walking amongst the sleeping bags. On another note, as I was fiddling around setting up my laptop, you know, so many memories came to me that what would have happened if I had bowed down to Swami like I did in Parthi and I was taking namaskar to go for a speech and, you know, in front of him, and he would say, what is all this you're carrying with you and coming? You know, and many times as I used to bow before him before speaking opportunities, he would reach into our pockets and take out that lifeline, you know, which was all the summary of points that you had, and keep it on the side of his table, you know, of his chair, as if that was a letter you intended to offer him, which it never was. And there, your mind would go blank, and you'd have to, you know, instead of thinking what an opportunity you had doing namaskar to Bhagwan, whom in a few years people would say, we never had a chance to see him, right? And you would start thinking, what's the beginning of my speech? I forgot. So we come here, we have to empty ourselves. And if we can empty ourselves when we enter the portals of this beautiful retreat zone, so to speak, it's only then that we'll be able to take something from here. So today, we have the chance to do exactly what Bob did that day, along with Dr. Phil, though Dr. Phil says that, you know, Bob did it, but really it was, you know, the prompting of both Dr. Phil and Bob to write over there, Bob loves Baba. And that's what we have a chance to do today, brothers and sisters. You and I have to take this opportunity to write on the walls of our heart, we love Sai. Chicago loves Baba. America loves Baba. All of us, Swami's children, love him. And that's really the reason that we are here. I don't know how much times have changed. Dr. Phil was saying that pet monkeys are not allowed anymore, you know, due to the guidelines of the Sai organization. But all of us still carry our pet monkey along with us, right? Can you leave your pet monkey anywhere? Swami used to often tell us, mad monkey, you know? Because we were at Swami's lotus feet at the time when we were growing into adolescence and coming out of adolescence. And Swami used to say, pitchy monkey, mad monkey. And that was the uniqueness of being around Swami. That, you know, despite all that you read or heard or whatever about avatars, godmen and all that, we had that first-hand proof. So, can you hear better now? Sairam, please just raise a hand so I'll know if I'm, you know, putting it down. So, you know, I'm just departing from the script as usual, but one of the things that we as students got to see in the private interview room was when he would lay bare all that you had done, thought, spoken, you know. But even apart from that, as he walked around the aisles as he suddenly parted students and went somewhere, he would look at you. And it actually gives me the goosebumps even as I speak about it, that in that split second when he would make eye contact with you or with you or with you, it would be revealed to you that he knows everything about you. Repeatedly, that was the experience of hundreds and thousands of students, devotees, and others. So what really is Satya Sai, our Lord? Sai was God as man. Very simply put, God as man. What is God? Nobody has ever had an answer. Nobody has been able to describe him. There are voluminous Vedas, but there is no single definition, no single four-bullet check mark that will define what God is. But for all of us, Swami was God as man. And let's see what God meant to us, how we understood God as we interacted with Bhagwan. You know, just like they announce, the MCs and others announce, please don't use your cell phones, please don't park here, so and so car is parked there. I also have some requests of you. I put a lot of pictures of Bhagwan, just like Dr. Phil's picture. It was so amazing, you know, that black and white picture brought back so many contiguous memories that we have, associations in our mind, right? And we are all the time pulling up useless associations, right? If you're driving and something, you see something, it sets off a trigger, right? So let's use the same flawed tendency of the mind to focus on Swami. And I'd encourage you to close your eyes when you feel inspired, to imbibe something that you see there, not the text, but the images, for instance. When I was just running this slide deck with my wife, and when she looked at this picture, tears just came out of her eyes before I had a chance to say anything. This is one of those pictures that tells you that, hey, this was somebody out of the world. It's not as if you can have this experience in your next lifetime even. You know, when you go to the water park, this is summer, we are all the time taking our kids, water park, beach, then this and that, right? It's not something you can ask for, pay for, plan for over the next weekend or even, you know, in your next birth. We were just given this sublime, endearing, elevating, but more than anything else, heartwarming experience with him. We were just given it. God knows how it came to us. We have no way to tally what we did, what our parents did. Swami says it's good parents. Somebody said it's good karma. We have no way of figuring that out. But we definitely know there's no way of getting a repeat performance. God is not going to come down and play the same leelas in the same way, in the same interactive mood as we had a chance to see when Baba became man for our sake. So who was Bhagwan? And I cannot read it, unfortunately, because by Swami's grace, my laptop is a blank. So that's actually a wonderful thing to happen, you know. So this is how Bhagwan started his journey. Brothers and sisters, don't imagine that, you know, he just waved his hands and hospitals came up, devotees appeared, all of that happened, water projects got done. No, not at all. As students at his feet at that moment when a lot of these things were happening, you know, it often occurs to me, if you and I were to know that at the end of your lives, you are going to achieve, you have to achieve so many different projects, so many different endeavors, you have to bring so many people to God. I think if I had an idea about that, I would just sink from the time I had that realization that this is all that I need to do. But look at Bhagwan. From minute to minute, from second to second, he played that role that he had designed for himself. Never once crumbling under the pressure or the tension or even the schedule of what he had programmed that avatar to do. Just look at how the shoulders are sagging there, how relaxed he is teaching somebody to meditate. It should calm us. It should give us confidence that we are in his image. He came with that power, but with that compassion. And for all that you and I need to achieve and do for him, it is that power, that cool, calm, undisturbed temperament that is going to work with us to achieve all that he wants us to do. Before you saw the Prashanti Nilayam with the airport, a cardiac surgery unit that could revive you in seconds, a mobile clinic that could, you know, had seen so many thousands of patients, that was what Puttaparthi was. It was the back of the back. And look at the background around Swami. It is cows and bulls famished because there isn't even enough green grass there in those days. And nevertheless, that's where he started. But look at where he reached with the toil and the involvement, but the happy participation that he taught us to do. You know, these ambassador cars are so difficult, you know, even to clean. They are so rounded. This picture I always like to show because I always wonder how he managed to get on top of that car. And imagine Bhagwan had a robe. It's not a shirt and a pant that we wear, right? How did he even get on top of that car? Then there were all these universal and epic proportion events that he did. Huge things he did. I'm not going to go into those now, but they were literally like the lifting of the Govardhan Giri, the revival of Walter Coven. If you read the experience of Walter Coven, and I really want to thank the organizers and all of you for putting me into the pressure of preparing these slides and preparing my talk, because every night after I could conclude my work, I would sit down with 7 or 8 different books of Swami, Conversations with Hislop, Kasturi's Loving God, Divine Lessons written by Dana Baskins, and I would soak into that phenomenal recounting of what Bhagwan had done through his years. Some of which Dr. Phil brought out so beautifully, so enchantingly to us. All of these great things that Bhagwan did, one of which I'll just touch on. You know, the body of this devotee, Radha Krishnaya, was lying in Swami's mandir for 3 days after he had passed. Many of you may not know these things. Bhagwan never wanted to even talk about any of the great things he did. And then Swami entered the room because the relatives were crying. And God knows what he did. But then he shouted at them and said, okay, open the door and come in now, it's over. And when they came in, they saw Swami giving this person a cup of coffee. That's how he made resuscitations, revivals, resurrection, so to speak, so easy. I saw one of these things myself, Brigadier Bose, some of you may know him, were sitting a couple of people away from me in Purnachandra Auditorium. I think it was the Dasara time. Swami was in the middle of his discourse, and without warning, and that's what Bhagwan always is, right? Everything is without warning. Swami abruptly came down from the auditorium stage, Purnachandra stage, and walked up to Brigadier Bose. And you know, human beings, how blissfully unaware we are. We were all looking at Swami and, you know, now what's happening, like what's going to happen kind of thing. And Swami had come down, 2-3 people away from me, Brigadier Bose had collapsed. And I always watch out for these things, these signs that Bhagwan gives. Because there has to be some way to discover, right? Like Dr. Phil said, Dr. Phil, pardon me for repeatedly connecting with your points, but I found them so beautiful. And, you know, they created all those images in my mind. You know, is it a talent? Is it a human talent that Swami is able to play the talam in that way, you know? Or is it divinity shining through the human body? And that's the reason, you know, doubt filters through the mind. You cannot have it better than this. Divinity cannot be given to us on a platter so easily any more than Bhagwan did it for us. But these incidents, all recorded historically, are a sign of what we saw. So I look out for these signs because they show you that it was not a human talent, you know. So Brigadier Bose was a huge man. He was 6 feet plus at least. And you know how Swami lifted him up? Normally you and I would lift a person from his shoulder, right? Swami lifted him up from the base of his spine, base of his head. Swami put his finger there and lifted him up like that. Of course, people helped and all. But these are the signs that Swami shows you. I mean, he need not even have done it, right? Swami could have just done like this from the stage and he would have recovered. But those are the efforts Bhagwan put in to show you and me to become aware of the divinity that filtered through him. Otherwise, we would have always been in that perpetual doubt that is it human talent or is it divinity? Is it human talent or is it divinity? One other incident which I saw was one of the grandmothers of our students who was crippled for 21 years. And she was waiting. Swami had called her for an interview. And Bhagwan just went across and tapped her knees. You know, he had all these letters in his hand. And that's what Bhagwan did, right? He brought the miraculous nature of his avatar down to such a ordinary level, you know, which for us should awaken us to the fact that, oh my God, this is all small stuff for Swami. But we look at it the other way. We start questioning. Just because he had letters in his hand and he didn't chant any big mantra or close his eyes or say, I will that your knees become okay. So that is why we think that maybe she was actually already walking and Swami, you know, she was just sitting in the wheelchair. We forget the miracle. We forget the power. We forget the doer of the miracle because Swami made those miracles so ordinary, so small for him in comparison to the stature, to the teaching, to the love, and to the compassion that was flowing through him. The act itself was small for him. The intent was huge. So Bhagwan brought millions to spirituality, millions. You know, WhatsApp that we use is a terrible thing, right? I mean, you're all the time looking at WhatsApp to see useless messages mostly. But there's one very beautiful message that I read, which said that at 11 a.m. on the last birthday that Bhagwan allowed us to celebrate, he told a person that all this was programmed 10,000 years back. And I don't want to either give credibility to that narration or whatever. And then he said that I have switched off the fan switch of the Kali Yuga and I have switched on the fan switch of the Golden Age. Till the last moment of this physical sojourn, he continued to inspire,
pull, bring into his divine fold, into his aura, people as no other human being has done. And I don't mean to say this in any sense of achievement, you know, because that's so dangerous to do. Once in Madikeri, which is known for its, you know, torrential rains, Kasturi was telling the crowd, Swami asked him to speak suddenly, and he was telling the crowd, because they were all fearful that, you know, there's going to be a torrential downpour. The clouds had gathered and they seemed to be coming close. Of course, in those days, they didn't have this mobile thing which tells you, your zone is safe. So Kasturi took it on himself to tell in front of Bhagwan, all the people there, a miracle, an instance of how Swami had, you know, pushed the clouds away by a wave of his hand. And he was so thrilled with himself for what he said. And then he sat down. And then when Swami took the stage, Swami started with this. Swami said, you know, Kasturi was telling you all not to worry about the rain and to have faith in me. But Kasturi didn't believe that himself. So it's very easy to preach. It's very easy to say all these things. But I am less than the least of you, for sure. For the amount that was given to us and to me, I should have been much more elevated, much more inspired than I am. And my participation in such events is a penance, is a way of seeking forgiveness from Bhagwan, is a coming back to Bhagwan, an offering to share, not to inspire you or to ennoble you or to give you a call to action, but to give myself. To tell myself that, hey, all that you saw, experienced, and were given such insights into, you know, that should completely transform you. So Bhagwan says in the last part, this is a quotation from him. These are not my words. This is not from WhatsApp. I can solve any problem, however naughty. I am beyond the reach of the most intensive inquiry and the most meticulous measurement. Only those who have recognized my love and experienced that love can assert that they have glimpsed my reality. This reality which creates the universe, in which the earth is just one spinning dot of dust, on which we are just insignificant beings in a huge mass of population. That reality that he embodies, we were given a glimpse of. We were given an opportunity to taste firsthand. This is not like reading a book of Sri Krishna and imagining how the Govardhan Giri could have stood on his little finger. This is not like that. The revival of Walter Coven or of Radha Krishna after 3 days after being dead, or the revival of Brigadier Bose. These are first-hand experiences. All of you have had so many such experiences. And the reason of the retreat is to retreat back into our consciousness, where these jewels, these treasures are hidden, locked up. Just because Bhagwan has decided to move on, he continues to work in numerous ways. He continues to work in untold ways. But it is you and I, remember, who have had this opportunity to bask, to taste in that love. This is again an incident that Sri Kasturi wanted to report in the Sanatan Sarthi. He received this letter from this person called Ramanand Rao telling him that Swami had appeared in Manjeri, which is a small place in Kerala, okay, while Swami happened to be in the Venkatgiri Palace. These two places, Manjeri and Venkatgiri, are 600 miles away. And as Kasturi went and asked Swami and repeatedly requested him to publish this in the Sanatan Sarathi, that many times Swami said no. And Swami, you know, Swami has a way, like Dr. Phil was saying, you know, you have to get the signal. So Swami showed his displeasure 15 times at least when Kasturi approached Bhagwan. Finally, Kasturi got Dr. Ramanand Rao to write the experience down. And you know what Swami told him? Swami said, make sure doubting Thomases are satisfied. And Kasturi had to go and check on each aspect of Ramanand Rao's letter. And then finally, Swami said, okay, do you have all the details? Are you convinced? And then he allowed him to publish it. So that was the rigor to which Bhagwan allowed himself to be submitted to. He knew. Just imagine, no? For Christ, after having cured so many people, healed in the thousands, and still he had to be crucified. And he had to subject himself to that crucifixion. I don't know whether all of you know, as a student, I was so inspired to read about Christ. And one of the things I read was how he healed the Roman soldier whose ear had been cut. It's really paradoxical, isn't it? Jesus, at the age of 32, was allowing himself to be taken to the cross and crucified. But he still manifested that compassion for the Roman soldier whose ear had been chopped off. Couldn't he have just decided to save himself from the crucifixion? And that is the story of God-man. That is the story of people who reflect a different reality than you and I are used to. So this incident, look at it this way. First of all, Bhagwan was in Venkatgiri. He manifested himself in Ramanand Rao's house. He partook of food. He sat for a few bhajans. Then he came out from the house and he told Ramanand Rao, I have to speak tomorrow in another place, Kalahasti. And imagine Ramanand Rao's situation. He thought Kalahasti is the name of some devotee. He did not realize that Kalahasti is about 40 miles further than 600 miles from where the Venkatgiri Palace is. Look at the sweetness in this thing. Swami never tried to create a distance by creating an awe, you know. Oh my God, Swami is speaking tomorrow in Kalahasti, but he was here just now. No. Swami's manifestation there in Ramanand Rao's house was love. It was not to impress. It was not to put a checkbox to check a box and say, one more miracle done. Not at all. For every devotee inspired, for every healing done, it was the flow of love. And I have one thing to show you how Bhagwan worked, provided I can get there and stop getting, you know, so wrapped up in what I'm saying. So brothers and sisters, with all that we saw of Bhagwan, some personally, some by, you know, from books, we should be so much inspired. But oftentimes we aren't. Like Dr. Phil said, in a sattvic mood we feel different. In a rajasic mood we feel different. We have to be constant. And, you know, Swami used to say in the old days, you have all these potholes on the road. And people in the US may not have been so used to potholes, but as the economy slows, now you're also used to potholes like we are in India. So these potholes fill with rainwater. And this rainwater becomes stagnant. And then leaves, pebbles, dirt, oil from the cars fills up the water in the potholes. Just look at the beauty of how Swami described it. Swami said, your mind is like these potholes that are filled with stagnant old rubbish in the water. So when, how do you replace this stagnant water in these various potholes in the road of your mind? It cannot be done slowly. You cannot go clean each pothole, take out the water. Not possible. So Swami said, when you do intense activity, when you call on me intensely, in that flood tide, when the river overflows on the road, there is no question asked of each pothole to empty itself. All these potholes are replaced in one go with fresh water. And that is the reason we are here. These two or three days that you're going to spend here, take it as that flood tide of the river. It's not possible to clean our minds through individual attention to each vasana, to each wrong thought, to each wrong tendency that you have. But in the heat, through the heat of the intensity that you and I manifest here, if you're able to do that without your knowing it, without attempting to clean the dirt in each of your potholes, you will actually clean your entire mind. I am thrilled to participate in these retreats, and I was requesting the organizers that I should live here rather than in that hotel, because that vibration, that inspiration. I attended the retreat in the Poconos for 2 years, and I don't know what others come for, but I come for inspiration. With Swami on 24th December, I wanted to stay away from Swami, because when you're in Swami's presence, you cannot close your eyes. You have to look at him, respect. So I would like to sit far away from Swami and close my eyes and soak in the singing of the Westerners. We used to call them Westerners. Okay, on the Christmas Eve. Because the beat was different, the songs were in English, they were so meaningful. They would do something to you. They would just lift you up from where you are. Even as Sai students, we had become so used to having so many darshans every day. I remember on one day, I counted, I had the chance to touch Swami's feet 29 times in one darshan. Swami was walking up and down, giving namaskar, doing other chores, that every time he passed, we would have a chance to touch his feet. 29 times I touched Bhagwan's feet. There are people who have not seen Swami's feet. There are people who have pined to touch Swami's feet, but have never been able to do it. And here is this individual who's touched Swami's feet 29 times in one session. But what has happened to him? What has he allowed to happen to him? We are constantly blocking, 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 blocking. That is the story of human beings. We are constantly blocking. Each event, each situation brings you new ideas, new possibilities, new challenges, new growth opportunities. And one of the big things we have to learn, brothers and sisters, is to stay open. Stay open. And I'm requesting you to stay open over these 2 days. Let what is being told to you, let the bhajans that are sung here, let the images that you see, let them be like that flood tide will flow over your potholes, yours and mine, and clean us up all of a sudden. It's never possible to do one at a time. So this quick incident about Raja Reddy. Raja Reddy was one of the persons who had this great opportunity to serve Bhagwan for years in Bhagwan's own inner chambers. One day Swami came to him and told him, Raja, if you see the light coming from my forehead, you are a Shiva devotee. If you see the light coming from my chest, you are a Krishna Bhakta. And you know, Swami had this habit of saying things without warning. If I have time, I can recount some of my own experiences in that way. And he had no clue about what Swami said, what's going to happen, what he should expect. It was just out of the blue. And then Swami lay down on the bed, and then all of a sudden, he noticed a very beautiful but dull light emanating from the chest region of Bhagwan. And see, brothers and sisters, we have to realize, people think you were with Bhagwan, you enjoyed so much, you saw firsthand. The churches of Jesus Christ have been there for 2,000 years. So many great people have been inspired. There have been on so many saints who lived a life in alignment with Jesus' teachings. Krishna, he has been worshipped for centuries. Nobody has ever seen Krishna. Ramakrishna, hundreds of people have changed their lives just on the basis of the short life of Sri Ramakrishna Paramahamsa, Raman Maharishi. So don't imagine for a moment that it is really necessary to have been there in the physical presence of the master. Because, and Swami used to say this many times to us, he used to point at the mass of devotees sitting there and says, Valanta bees laga unnaru. They are like bees. They know that the nectar is here. Meeranta frogs laga unnaru. You are like frogs. I have water. Frogs in the well. You think studies, doing an MBA, going out, becoming somebody big is the purpose of your life. You are given this sai. And I was just noticing, out of all the things written there, look at that. Sai's picture is only in the eye. Swami used to say, Sai stands for service, adoration, illumination. And you see the Swami in the eye, which is in the illumination. So under the candle, Swami used to say, there is darkness. That's the illumination we didn't have. So when you think that you were not Sai students, you didn't study in Anandpur or Parthi or Brindavan, or you were not as lucky as Dr. Phil Gosselin to, you know, Swami walked around, they lived with Swami, he delivered milk cans around Swami. When you think all that, remind yourself that St. Francis of Assisi never saw Jesus Christ. Mother Teresa in Calcutta was 2,000 years after the advent of Jesus Christ. So it's the duty of those who had this opportunity to be with Bhagwan to tell you some of these things. But it's really what Swami has set in motion during his avatarhood that is going to manifest the changes that he is bringing about. Not necessarily that during his lifetime only everything would happen. We are just the carriers. We are the wiring. You know, we are the wiring. Swami was there. We are the wiring and the plug points to carry the message onwards. But really the events, the glow, the illumination, the effect, the benefit of all that Bhagwan was and did is going to come. Yes, there is a role to play of this wiring and the plug points. But so many bulbs will glow downstream to the life of Bhagwan. And you and I are important in Bhagwan's mission because we have to be those wirings, that wiring to carry this onwards to the inspiration that is going to come. So when Raja Reddy saw this, you know, Swami went out the next morning for darshan. And can you believe what Raja Reddy did? He opened Bhagwan's almirah. There was a big almirah. And Swami used to always carry a 5-cell torch. It was a joke in those days, 5-cell torch. Because in Parthi, power used to go so often, you know, current. So when I talk all these things, I see a lot of quizzical looks because what do you mean by power going, right? But in Parthi, that was the norm. And Swami used to carry that huge torch, not for himself, but because the devotees, they used to sleep around him in those days, you know, could use that torch to find their way around to the bathroom or, you know, whatever. And what he did was, he took that five-cell torch, he took out the blanket that Bhagwan used to use, then he put the five-cell torch under the blanket and he tried to see whether the light emanating on the other side of the blanket kind of matched what he had seen the previous night coming out of Swami's body. So you may think, and I'm not trying to criticize Raja Reddy. In fact, I have cried reading his 8 or 9 volumes that he has published on, that have been published on Radio Sai. So inspiring. What a human being he was. How Bhagwan has picked these fantastic people. And you know, when he was trying that experiment, Bhagwan walks into the interview room or the room where they were living and he said, "Yem ra, em chestunau?" And you know, see, Bhagwan never tries to correct or admonish or rebuke. So, but you can look at how it is, right? When Christ allowed himself to be crucified, but also cured the ear of the Roman soldiers who were crucifying him, right? Bhagwan, after doing all these miracles, yet he had to see what a thorn it must have been in a human heart, right? To see that somebody doesn't trust you, your own people don't trust you. But that's the nature of humanity, that we constantly don't trust. How many ever experiences are given to us, evidence is given to us, we still go back. And that's the purpose of these retreats. Not to dwell in the mind. In the mind, you will forever manifest doubt. Because that's the work of the mind. The mind is like a computer. It's just been programmed to do that. It's been programmed to question, analyze, and you know, it's good at that. So for your company, when you're preparing PowerPoints, you're trying to analyze a customer situation, tell them what they should do, you know, problem statement, current state, future state, and all that. It's good there. It's no good here. So what are we trying to do here? We are trying to awaken the heart. Many of us even forget that we have a heart. We are trying to awaken that heart. And that's what pulled us to Puttaparthi. Swami used to say, put apart the eye. That's what he did for us, right? When we entered the zone of Puttaparthi, even when we made the resolve to go to Puttaparthi, our hearts would open. We would start feeling that joy. So that's what Raja Reddy counsels us. Through those years of experience that he saw Swami, he says, we have this tendency to analyze Swami. Is it the light from the torch going through the blanket? Analysis. Questioning. Did he really tap those knees and make her walk? Or was she actually able to walk but just in a wheelchair? Analysis. So Raja Reddy, very beautifully, and I wanted to share this with you right in the beginning of your retreat. Take some of these things with you. Don't analyze Bhagwan. Enjoy Bhagwan. Enjoy Bhagwan. Just take it as it is given to you. All those books, Radio Sai, all of this was not written for you to analyze him. It was written to give you a constant memory, constant flood tide of cleaning, sweet, ennobling, elevating things. Use it that way. Leave the questioning mind, the analytical mind, and as Raja Reddy counsels, apply that analytical mind to yourself, not to Bhagwan. It's so easy, right? We sit in a chair and we talk about how good was that piano performance, you know? Oh no, I think he went off tune here and there. So easy to comment, to criticize, but so hard to do. So that's what Raja Reddy counsels us. Don't analyze Bhagwan. Don't get into that erroneous approach. We have been given this opportunity, but it's our duty to remember not to analyze him, but to enjoy him and to analyze ourselves. Soak in the many activities that Bhagwan did. Close your eyes. Try to take these things in. Far more than anything that I'm saying. The beauty. Look at the picture of Bhagwan behind the fire. What a fantastic picture. It should do something to you. If it is not doing something to you, clean up. Start allowing these pictures, these ideas. Look at how Swami is talking to Sachin Tendulkar. Such a young guy. He's just used to scoring centuries. But look at the centuries Swami scored talking to him. Swami is able to tune in, to inspire, to elevate all people from all walks of life. Take these things in. Let them clean your hearts. Touching on the topic of Janmashtami, I just wanted to share these pictures with you. It's kind of out of context, but, and Dr. Phil knows that I also, when I came to Bhagwan, I had the good fortune to see and to do bhajan in the old, you know, banyan tree shed that was there. Such a wonderful experience, Swami sitting there, and you know, all that was kind of changed over the years, and you had Trai Brindavan and you had the new hall. But let that picture inspire you, you know, and this image. And then this is a picture of the Krishna ring that Bhagwan materialized, I don't know in which year, but bask in the nobility, in the beauty of these images, brothers and sisters. So I'm sorry I've got so many slides, but I'm going to just move to a little lighter topic. Just wanted to talk about, how do you recognize Swami? So many unique things that he did, right? But some of the most unique things which really inspire us are the mudras. I just wanted to spend a minute on that. You know, in the morning when we had on a festival day, like it was yesterday night for us, and it was Janmashtami in the morning in Parthi, and I was talking to my dad. They live in Parthi for many years. And just, I was hearing the Veda chanting on the mic while I was talking to him on the phone, you know, the Veda chanting in Parthi. And it brought all those memories to me, back to me. You know, when Swami used to come out on a festival morning, he would all the time be waving his hands, all the time. And probably he never told us these things only because, you know, we were not in that vantage point to be able to fathom them. Generations to come will understand these things. He was elevating the atmosphere. He was taking away our vasanas. He was making the environment inspirational for us. And that's why I wanted to touch on this. So the most common gesture of Bhagwan, you know, is the Tirodhana Mudra. It is the gesture of circling the right palm in an outward direction, driving away impurities or negativities in the surroundings. And you will see that this in the right hand or the left hand, and most beautifully in both hands, you know, is one of the most sweet gestures and pictures of Bhagwan that you can meditate on. And then, of course, what we every day need, right? In all, so there are some leading people who say, you know, so what's my problem today, right? We start our day like that, right? We love to remain in the sphere of the problems that we identify for ourselves. We want to live with problems, actually. Though we keep on saying, I wish I had no problems, we actually want to live in the sphere of problems. We have limited our energy so much. We are so convinced by dwelling in the mind layer, right, that we don't allow ourselves to grow out of it. So we need the Abhaya Mudra a lot, right? We need Swami to come and tell us, why fear when I am here? Actually, there should be no need for that. As mature devotees, we should never feel, and I'm telling myself this more than you, because when you're not given a promotion, when things don't work out in the way you want, whatever goes wrong, seemingly wrong in your lives, you should not feel the need for the Abhaya Mudra. Remember, the Tirodhana Mudra instead is actually already clearing away things from your karma, from your life, and you actually never need to need the Abhaya Mudra. That is my submission. And then, of course, very sweet is the Anugraha Mudra. That is what happened to all of us. That's our story. That we were given the Anugraha Mudra. Constantly, you and I were given not Abhaya Mudra is transactional. It is operational. Anugraha Mudra. During the planning of the lifetime of this great avatar, Swami planned that you and me would be part of his life. What a wonderful thing. God knows in which lifetime you were, I was, whether I was an animal or a dog or a human being or something else. When Swami planned this avatar, he planned, hey, I will take Ravi Mariwala for some time with me. I will take Suresh Sharma with me. I will take Murli Kaje with me. I will take Krishna Ravuri with me. I will take Dr. Phil Gosselin with me. How fortunate we are, brothers and sisters. And what a humbling thought it is that this great personality, this tremendous power, the effect of whom will now unfold for the centuries. And if you don't believe me, look at the Bible. Look at the Bhagavad Gita. The movements that these great personalities initiate runs its course over centuries. So that was the Anugraha Mudra. And then this is a very rare picture that speaks about the Shakti Pata Mudra. Bhagwan himself passing on the activation of a devotee's spiritual energy. And that's what also Bhagwan did to a lot of us. We'll talk more about it. But I'll conclude by a very quick... So I want you to also dwell on this. If we really did all the things that we are capable of, we would literally astound ourselves. And this, though it is spoken in the context of science, is equally true in the context of spirituality. So I'm going to move ahead in the interest of time. I'm not going to talk about all this. And we had a small workshop, the old students last year, and they gave me this topic as part of a panel, you know. And, you know, walk with Swami. So Swami had spoken to us. I was one of the students in his physical presence in those days when the first batch of MBA was there. And Swami had spoken to them about various things. There were a set of talks that he gave in the foyer in the college or in the institute, not in the auditorium. You know, we were sitting close to him. And there are many pictures and videos of those things. And at that time, Swami had for the first time, expanded on this idea that walk with me, do not walk in front of me, for I will not follow you. And do not walk behind me, for I shall not lead. And then he had said in that broken English, you know, as if he couldn't say it right. You can hear that video. And he said, still, walk with me. And then he didn't say anything more. And of course, all of us know that the vantage point from which Swami was speaking was unity. He was universal, but he was also united with each one of us. And he felt that pulsating unity. And that's why he did whatever he did. He, you know, never barred anybody. He never looked at qualifications. all that he did came from that vantage point of unity, which he didn't have to cultivate. So I was really at loggerheads. I didn't know what that statement really meant. It was kind of obvious, right? Don't follow me. I mean, I won't follow you. You don't follow me. You walk with me. But what is there in that statement, Swami? And I think I'm saying this with absolutely no pride. I'm not saying it as if I'm some vehicle of Swami. Please, disclaimer. I'm just saying it as an example to myself that there is this divine force, this divine consciousness out there, out here, in here. All you need to do is connect with it, connect with it. It's like taking out your cell phone, unlocking it, and you know, you're connected. And for 2-3 days, I kept on thinking about this and nothing was coming. And you know, you can keep on being analytical and try to beat around the bush like we do in a lot of business development and all of that. But that night when I slept, I had my kids, you know, they're very young. I slept with them on a bed. And then in the morning, early morning at around 5 a.m., this hit me. And Swami is full of these insights. He constantly is willing to share his insights, his love, and his secrets with you if you tune in to him. And this is what came to me. Walk with me. But what's most important, brothers and sisters, is walk. What is walk? Walk is start your journey. Start. We cannot be armchair critics. We cannot be passengers. We cannot be passive. The admonition there from Swami that came to me is walk. Get up, walk, number one. And then these other things came to me. What happens? And this was not an analytical flow. This just came to me as a flash. And I had understood it. And then, of course, I sat down and wrote it down. But what happens when you walk with somebody? You walk in step. If you're walking with your dad, let's say he's 80 like my dad is, it's insulting, right? If I'm on my cell phone and I fall behind him, right? He's my dad, he loves me, he's not going to say anything, but it's not the thing to do. Or if he's older and slower and I walk in front of him, how bad? You're not keeping in step with your partner. So walk with me means keep in step with me. Fall into rhythm with me, Bhagwan. Who do you walk with? I often visit Manhattan. If you happen to fall in step with some lady or some man whom you don't know, in a second they're going to turn around and look at you. Hey, what are you trying to do? Right? So you don't walk with a person you don't have a relationship with. So that was what Bhagwan was telling us. Walk with me. You have a relationship with me. Equally, with that relationship comes responsibility. When you walk with a person, don't you tell your mom in the mall or something, hey mom, give me those plastic bags, I'll carry it for you. Hey mom, watch your step, we are entering the escalator. Right? With the relationship comes responsibility. And finally, if you do all of this, you walk, you recognize the relationship, you recognize the responsibility, and you fall in rhythm, which means you tune into Sai, then for sure you'll have realization. And brothers and sisters, believe me, the reason I want to talk about this, that I've spoken about this here is, all this came to me without the explanation that I told you. That's the beauty of Bhagwan. The things that he spoke and gave us are so full of Vedant, they can be expanded for years. But at the same time, they are very inspiring and they are very internally focused. Can I take 2-3 more minutes? Okay. I'm going to end with, this is the problem of all speakers, right? That you always have this need to ask the organizers, hey, can I please take a few more minutes? So I'm not going to do any of this. I want you to spend 1 minute out of the 2-3 minutes that I asked them for, closing your eyes after every slide that you see. Humble request. So this is a picture of Bhagwan. Let's become meditative for a minute. In Trai Brindavan on the first floor. So Swami, we are with you in Trai Brindavan now. Through the Anugraha Mudra, you are actually pouring the divine consciousness, the healing, the compassion, and more than anything else, that love that Satya Sai meant to us. Lord, you established Dharmakshetra in Mumbai, where millions came to you. In the heart of that city of Mumbai, where there is commerce, there is urbanization, and there are a lot of worldly things, you established that beautiful lotus-shaped building that became your home. Look at Bhagwan's little body over there, giving darshan to the millions at 6 a.m. in the morning. I have been part of this. It's one of the most touching darshans of Nagar Sankirtan you can ever have. Take that in. Let that soak in as a sign of the transformational influence of Bhagwan. Now turn your mind to the other big house of Bhagwan, where Bhagwan blessed devotees from Chennai in Sundaram. Look also at Trai Brindavan, where Bhagwan adorned the jhula and spent hours regaling students and staff in the evenings in what is called Trai Brindavan sessions. Most dear to Bhagwan and to all of us, beyond all of these other ashrams that he set up. Bring Puttaparthi into your minds, brothers and sisters. Bring Puttaparthi into your minds. These three pictures that opened up. This is Bhagwan standing right outside his interview room. This is Bhagwan with the idol of Gayatri. That is Bhagwan telling us, hey, this is my own statue which I am inaugurating. Disciples, students, devotees, be ready for the events that are going to come. I am energizing those events. I am there in those events. Those events are not happening without me. The trust, the faith, the inspiration that you had in seeing me, in letting me work on you, that is the same inspiration you should have in those events as well. Look at Bhagwan in Kodaikanal. These images are the summary of our connection with Bhagwan in many ways. All of us had experiences in one or more of these ashrams of Bhagwan, so to speak, and of course there are more. Now look at the center point where we started this little journey. Let it transform into the silent but unwavering jyoti, which is nothing but an example, an instance of what God really is. So we started this session by talking about God. And I said, I have no idea what God is. Nobody has ever described God effectively. But light, and Swami has said this many times, the jyoti, one little jyoti, like it is there in that little oil lamp can be the source of the lighting of millions of jyotis, literally. As long as there is oil in that lamp, anybody can come and join his forces with that wick and take away an equal proportion of light without diminishing the power, the glory, the glow of that source light. Let's remind ourselves that this Bhagwan whom we met in Dharmakshetra, in Vrindavan, in Kodaikanal, and whom we saw so many times in Prashanti Nilayam, is actually that source light. In the course of career, family, vacationing, and all the other activities that we do, education, we forget that in fact there should be nothing binding us, nothing closing us, nothing hurting us. If at all we have allowed things to hurt us, to close us, to limit us, it is because we operate from the mind. During these days in the retreat, allow yourself to remember Swami as you met him in these various ashrams. But Swami as the light who has given you, who has allowed you to take away a sample of that same light that he is and which is glowing within you today. It's your duty not to neglect that light, not to think that that light is meaningless or is fading. I will end with a short incident. Dinah Baskins has written about this very beautifully. At one point she prayed to Bhagwan, Swami, I want an experience of oneness. I want an experience of divine consciousness. And why am I saying this? Why are we talking about this? Because you and I can do the same thing. I remember praying to Swami when some of my relatives were sick. It just came to me that you should have a repetitive way of reaching Swami. And I kept on saying, Swami help so-and-so, Swami help so-and-so, Swami help so-and-so. And it became such a chant in my mind that when Swami came out for darshan and he asked me by name, how is so-and-so? I don't want to name her here. She was a close relative. How is so-and-so? And I was amazed. Is this telepathy spoken about in Facebook or on Twitter or in emails or told to you by your family or your friends? No. This is the heart-to-heart connection between you and your God, Sai. And here in America, when Dinah Baskins prayed to Swami, you can read that article. I have the book with me. And I'm very inspired by this article. She, all of a sudden, was given this very grand but subtle and soft and sweet experience. And later on, I know I don't have time, Swami, when she asked him, Swami, what was that experience? He said, you know, Swami has this unique way, right? Very big things, he will make it very small. But if you miss a talam in a bhajan or you go out of Shruti once, he will talk about it for 3 years. You know? So such a great incident as I'm going to relate to you very quickly now. Swami said very powerfully but very simply, that was a lot of grace. That was a lot of grace. So what was that? She felt she was witnessing an unseen hand. For several weeks, she found that I'm reading out what she's written. My outward life remained the same, but was inwardly transformed to a sweet, balanced state of consciousness. It was an impersonal me. The word consciousness evoked a feeling of endearment and a new meaning. My life became an exciting adventure, rich with meaning and purpose. I observed an unseen force guiding every event, every person. Each act, no matter how trivial, had a reason, a teaching. And she saw the intention behind people who were acting, not just the people and what they did. She could actually see. You can read this. Please don't think this is a WhatsApp thing or just conjured up by me now. I have the book. You can go buy it and see it and all of that. She said she started seeing the intention, that it was all transparent to her. Why a person was doing this. Normally she would have criticized that person so much or corrected him. But she could see, and not just with one person. She saw this across the people she was interacting with. I could see the divine hand weaving the fabric of life and felt total trust in the finality. Then in the subsequent week, her state of mind moved to be appreciative of what were the states of minds of other people whom she was interacting with. The magnitude of this awareness was overwhelming. It was the greatest possible discovery. Often I was filled with marvel at the pattern of seeming coincidences. At other, a sense of gratitude. My focus then slowly moved to a sensitivity of the states of minds and feelings of others. This I covered. And then, Swami used to always tell us, what you are seeing is untrue. What you don't see is true. Brothers and sisters, some of you have come 60 years, 70 years. Some of you have come 20 years, 30 years. But we've all missed the point. Let's start by accepting that today on the first session of the retreat. You and I went through school, college, career, marriage, family. Some of us are grandparents, some of us are sportsmen, some of us are IT professionals, some of us may be jobless, doesn't matter. The fact is that you and I have all missed the point. We missed the major point that Swami is giving us a glimpse of here. And she talks about the mist. I became aware of a shapeless force like a fine mist or vapor, entering all objects. People, plants, animals were lifeless before it entered. It was like seeing a hidden hand slip into a limp puppet, bringing it to life. I found it no longer necessary to practice any teachings as they had become my essence. I did not identify my children with the mistakes they made. I felt only pure, infinite love towards them. Only, it was not my love. Words sent from that highest frequency always hit their mark. See, that's what Swami did, right? He was talking from that highest frequency. So that is why the Sai organization is in 165 countries. You are inspired. You wake up in the morning and you say, Sai Ram. There is no Sai Baba on earth today. You are 11,000 miles from Puttaparthi. But you remember Sai, you look for his photo. I traveled yesterday from New Jersey. The last act I did was pack a photograph of Swami and put it in my bag. Somebody would say, this guy must be completely bonkers. Why is he carrying this photograph with him? That photograph is in my hotel room today. It inspires me. I want it to be with me. I want that to be the way I live life. Right? So that is what, that is all because of the frequency Swami sent out from where he was. That was the effect of the aura that he was ruffling, the atmosphere that he was cleaning when he did those mudras. And then change yourself and you change the world. From that vantage point where she was, the whole world became different for her completely. She had no reason to correct people, no reason to think critically about people, because she understood the intent, the causes, the reasons, and more than anything else, she saw this mist doing things. And then, how we lose it, right? How we lose it. We all lose it. The inspiration that you feel in a great bhajan, the inspiration that you and I felt in a great interview with Swami or in some great darshan that we had of Swami, we lose it. How do we lose it? And Swami used to always tell us this after many, in many interviews, in many darshans, he would say, after a bhajan, don't start chatting. Don't remember that, hey, I've got an exam tomorrow. We were students. And Swami used to describe it so well. Go collect your slippers, because you have to collect your slippers, right? So this is how Swami had those touch points with our routine life. Say, go collect your slippers in silence and start walking with your head down. Don't look at other people, because when you look at them, gone. They'll say, hi, how are you, Sai Ram? They'll say, my mom came, you know, I have sweets for you, I want to meet you in the hostel. All useless, small, trifling things will come into the conversation. And this meeting point that you had with the great avatar, who's no more there for you today, you can go to Puttaparthi or Vrindavan any number of times. You're not going to be able to see the Bhagwan that we saw in those days, that you saw in those days. So remember to take those priceless moments and nourish them. That little jyoti that you're picking up from this ever effulgent jyoti that Bhagwan was, don't smother that flame that is there in your heart by bringing in common routine small talk. And Dinah Baskins, I really marvel at her, the way she shares. She writes about how she lost it. She describes this feeling and this experience to a dear friend. And look at how it happens. She says, it was as if a vacuum drew the mist out of me. That powerful mist that she had seen, that mist went out of her and remained minimally in her. And she lost that whole experience just by sharing it. One has to keep this secret and keep our focus on Bhagwan. So you've not had the last of me, unfortunately. You're going to have more of me, brothers and sisters. And I'll let you go now. I thank you from the bottom of my heart, not just for a patient listening, but I thank Bhagwan and the organizers for giving me the opportunity to dwell so much on Bhagwan. Over the last month or so, I've been reading, and it's evoked huge intensity, love, and memory of Bhagwan in my own heart. So thank you all, and Jai Sai Ram.